Greenfall.
So I got out of the cabin, and I told the my companion, "You've got to get out. It's very dicey, this." And I got to the entrance, and there was a soldier with a steel hammer and a rifle with a bayonet. I said, "What are you doing here?" I said, "You better go and save yourself, because this boat's going down." He said, "We've had no orders." I said, "I'm very sorry about that." And I went on the deck, and I could see what was happening. There were attempts to let the boat down, and there was panic on the top deck, on the boat deck. A lot of Italians on the boat. The Germans on the whole stuck together. We stuck together. And we were on the deck, and I said to my friends, "Look, there's only one chance. You won't get in a boat. That's impossible. You can see what's happening." The boat deck was wired with barbed wire. And I thought, "Oh, there's only one chance." Now, the weather was very good. It was very calm, and it was not very cold. And it was sort of the sun wasn't really shining, but it was a very nice summer day. And I said, "The only chance we've got is to get off." And I said, "First of all, don't wear your life jackets. You've got to get off the boat. The only thing you can do is get into the water and swim away. In the meantime, we'll throw everything possible that will float overboard." And our group, we were a group of anti-Nazis, at that point, started to throw everything we could get hold of overboard. And the ship, as it was torpedoed, of course, still was floating, and it was making quite a lot of headway, because it wasn't slow boat, and even as torpedoed, it goes on by its own inertia, and was making quite some way. And I said, "Well, first of all, you don't jump in the water with your life jacket. Secondly, we've got to get everything that floats overboard." And we did this. We threw everything we could possibly lay our hands on. That was timber. There was all sorts on the deck, and benches and all sorts. We threw everything overboard. And then I said to them, "Look, you've got to get in the water. There's no other way." And they were very frightened. They said, didn't know what to do. I said, "Look, you've got to get out and swim away as far as you can and get hold of some debris." I said, "We're not far from land anyway. We'll be rescued." Anyway, they said they wouldn't go, so I said, I'll go. I led it. And I went overboard and I swam away. I jumped in and carried my life jacket, and I put my life jacket on, because those life jackets are very dangerous. They kill you if you jump with them, because they were cork and they rise up as soon as you hit the water. Now, I'm a very experienced swimmer, and I've swum at sea quite a lot. It was no problem. And I got in the water and I swam away as far as I could from the boat. And of course the boat then disappeared. And eventually the others followed me, most of them. I couldn't see them. And I swam away from the boat. And eventually I got hold of an upturned bench, which had some tanks underneath, you know, air, the big drums. And I got hold of one of those, and I tried to sit on it, and I couldn't really manage it by myself. And I hung on to this for a while. And then I was joined by a soldier and two other people, the probably sailors. I don't know who they were. And between us, we managed to sit on this thing. We got hold of it. And I said, "If everyone sits on the corner, yes, we'll be all right. We'll sit on it and we'll be rescued. Don't worry about it." And we got onto this thing, and it only touched us about once. We sat on it, and it was not uncomfortable. The sun was, it was a nice breeze. It was a lovely day. The sun was shining, and the water wasn't cold. Now, and I've read descriptions of the Atlantic, and it always says, "Oh, the water is cold," and all that. But it wasn't cold at all. We were about 300 miles off the mainland of Ireland, and we sat on this thing. The only thing is, we dried out as well, sitting on this thing. We only capsized once, and sitting on this thing, I felt hungry. And so did the others. And they were British. There were no Germans on the same on this floating thing, on this upturned bench. And soon we were torpedoed about 6 o'clock in the morning. And during the morning, whilst we were sitting on this thing, we were sighted by a Sunderland flying boat, and we knew then we were going to be rescued. And what the Sunderland did, it dropped, that there was a huge area where there was debris and people floating about and bodies floating about. It dropped flares, smoke flares, in a huge circumference. And we watched this, and we knew we were going to be rescued. The rescue organizations were being mobilized, but we knew this from the flying boat, of course. And we just sat there. And eventually a destroyer appeared, a Canadian destroyer, I think it was the H-87. And they sent out motorboats, and they came alongside this floating thing and got us in the motorboat. And they were taken to the destroyer, and on the destroyer, had to climb up the rope ladder, you know, over the side, and got onto the destroyer. And when I got up the top, they said, "Are you all right?" I said, "Yes, I'm all right." So they said, go below, get something to eat, and get a drink. And as I got up the top of the ladder, the little rope ladder, they gave me a drink of, I think it must have been a rum or something. I said, "I'm not cold, I'm all right." So I went below and I got some, got an egg and a sandwich, and it was absolutely jam-packed with people, hundreds in this destroyer. It was very dangerous, actually. And they were all over, couldn't move on this thing eventually. And we were taken back to Greenock, and on the boat itself, on the destroyer, I met somebody else I'd met in Seaton. I'd been visiting Seaton by some local people, and I met those. And then, lo and behold, I met the helmsman of the Irondale Star, who was a Communist Party member from Liverpool. I met him on the destroyer. And I said, "What are you doing here?" He said that I've just got the officer, so he was the helmsman when the boat was torpedoed. And then I said to him, "You'll report, I'm safe." Eventually, when we get to Scotland, we knew we were going to Scotland. And he said, "Oh, yes." And he knew me, and I knew him. It's very strange, that was. Anyway, we were taken to Scotland, and in Scotland, in Greenock, we were put in a warehouse. It was awful. It was cold and it was dark. And the Salvation Army fed us. And a clergyman came, and he distributed postcards, actually, and said, "Write your name and address on it and say on this card, just, 'I'm saved,' yes, or 'I'm safe,' something like that." And I did this. I've still got the postcard somewhere in my files, and he sent it off to relatives. He sent it off to my fiance. It was very good. they were excellent. And from the soldiers of the Gardas were absolutely first class. They were very sympathetic and they were very good. And then we were taken to a camp in Edinburgh. And there were a group of us, of course, there. All the Communist Party members, except Abrahams, who was a British, who was in the Liverpool YCL, he drowned. Why, I don't know. But all the German Communist Party members, except Ulrich, who had been actually expelled from the Communist Party, I've written about him too, they were all saved. And we were in Edinburgh for about, well, 10 days, almost 10 days, maybe 9 days, and we were kitted out, and we were very well fed there, and we were in tents, and the weather was very good, and we got British Army uniforms with the buttons cut off. And we were on the back door was painted the Red Cross, and the legs were painted the Red Crosses of the trousers. And we were rested there, which was very good. We slept a lot because we were very exhausted after the Arendals there. And then from there we were taken to Liverpool. And in Liverpool we were put in some municipal building overnight. We were taken by train to Liverpool, and then the next morning we were taken into the Dinara. Now that was the worst experience. Liverpool, the landing stage, was the worst experience I've had of the war, as far as the British Army was concerned. I'm sure Spielberg will be very interested in this. Now, the Dinara was...
In what way was it so bad?
Of what happened on the landing stage. There were internees from all sorts of places in England, from the camps, Heighton and wherever, taken onto the Dinara. There were about 1,500 prisoners eventually taken to Australia, something like that. I've got the exact list, I've got it in my files from the Australian government. On the landing stage itself, there was a group of the Pioneer Corps, and what they did was they, those, not us, but those who were in decent clothing who had come from the various camps with luggage, and a lot of them had money as well, a lot of money, they were being beaten up and they were robbed, and the soldiers, they were from the Pioneer Corps, they were in a state of hysteria being produced by their greed. They were robbing the internees, and I've seen soldiers with their battle dress jacket undone, with money stuffed into their blouses. And they were in a completely, hysterical in the situation of robbing and beating up, opening the suitcases and so on. It was a most scandalous sight. And the worst of it was that on the landing stage, which was closed to the ordinary people, and I knew the place very well, there was Liverpool police, plainclothes, they were watching this. I've got it in my biography. And the internees who had anything on them, that we were completely, I had no luggage at all, nothing, I had absolutely nothing. And those who, the survivors of the Arendal Star who were there, they couldn't be robbed because they had nothing. We had absolutely nothing. And well, we were taken onto the Dinera. We were put in a hold in the Dinera. And on the Dinera itself, people were robbed as well. And there was luggage. Everything was strewn out on the landing stage, in on the boat. And the people were systematically robbed and beaten up as well. I wasn't beaten. I saw them being robbed, but I didn't see anybody actually being beaten. But that happened, and there were people from the CID on the landing stage, I'm absolutely certain. They were the only plainclothes people allowed on there. And the officers were there from the Pioneer Corps. And that's happened on the landing stage. It was absolutely the most outrageous incidents I saw during the whole of the war and what happened on the Liverpool landing stage.
So the CID didn't intervene?
Of course they didn't do a damn thing. And they were soldiers, and there wasn't military police there either. Actually, the commandant of the group that of the Pioneer Corps was court-martialed. He got 2 years with hard labour. That happened later on. There's some. I've got some cuttings about this, and it was reported later on in the. And there was a court-martial. These people were eventually court-martialed. But that's another problem. I've got some documents. I've photocopied them in the Public Records Office. But I haven't got all the documents yet, and I'm just wondering what's missing. But I can tell you that the officers of the guard on the Arandura Star and who were in Liverpool were court-martialed. But the details...
Dinera?
The Dinera were court-martialed. And I know in one case one of the officers was sentenced to 2 years with hard labour. But the details of these trials and the documentation I haven't got, but there is a newspaper report of this which I've got of the court martial. Anyway, then we were put on the Dunera, and the Dunera soon sailed, and we hadn't a clue where we were going to, what was happening. We thought at first we were going to Canada because other people had gone to Canada, and the Arandura Star was going to Canada. But we sailed out of the Western Approaches, and then we took a southerly direction, and of course we knew we weren't going to Canada. It was going south all the time, and it was the 11th of July, and on the way to Africa, we had one panic. Obviously, the ship was hit by something. There was a mine. I thought it was a torpedo, actually. But it didn't explode. And there was panic on the ship. We knew that some torpedoes at the time didn't explode on impact. There were some faulty ones. I forget about this. Anyway, there was panic on the boat, but the boat sailed on, nothing happened. And we landed in Takoradi and Freetown and so on, and we went on and on.
You went ashore?
No, we weren't allowed to go ashore. We just stopped, and the colonial officers came on the boat to have a look, and probably it was taken on the water and food, I don't know. And we were given quinine against malaria because the coast, the West African coast, was notorious. And even being in the just outside the harbour was quite dangerous. So we were given quinine, but we had no sickness. But we took the quinine because we had to swallow it, and it was wrapped up in cigarette paper, actually. We had to swallow it. It was not very nice, but better than having malaria. So the journey went on, and of course, we landed in Australia in September. It was a long journey.
What were conditions like on the voyage?
Well, I can only describe where I was, yes, because the policy by the guards was to keep the internees apart. Every hold was separate, and there was no contact whatsoever. The crew, we had no contact with the crew either. The guards were from the Pioneer Corps, and some of the guards were quite sympathetic. I got to know some guards who were guarding our hold, who had been members of the NUWM in Cardiff. They were coloured. They were half caste, and they were very sympathetic, and it was quite useful talking to them. But otherwise, we had no contact whatsoever with the crew or the rest of the guards. Now, the conditions in the ship, well, we were fed. It wasn't bad. The food wasn't bad. The washing and toilet facilities where I was weren't bad. They were not luxurious, but they weren't bad. It was uncomfortable in the sense that I had to sleep on the floor. We were on the bottom of the very bottom of the hold. Some people slept on tables, some were in hammocks, and I slept on the floor all the time. It was with friends, it was a question of keeping yourself amused. We had a lot of conversations which were interesting. We learned a lot from various people of all kinds, and there were many new friends, most internees, because there'd been a new lot from various internment camps, and in our lot they were all Jewish or anti-fascist, and in my hold not even German nationalists amongst them, none. We're all the same persuasion. A lot of Jews were there. And what did we do? Well, we're lucky we had some chess boards, and I played chess. I like playing chess, and I played chess all the time to Australia. I played chess every day. I played about 8 hours a day. There was nothing but very much else to do. They had very little to read, hardly anything, and we played chess. We were taken out once a day to walk on the deck, and a terrible experience on one occasion was we was on the car. A chap in front of me, who I didn't know, jumped overboard to kill himself. And I got the name, I found out the name of this person. He killed himself on the day his visa expired for the Argentine. That was very depressing. But it's the only suicide I've witnessed during the whole of the internment. And they tried to pick him up, but they couldn't. They bought hold too, they couldn't do it. I don't know why. But anyway, that's what happened. We walked around the deck. It was underground, and it was better than being in the hold all the time.
Which number hold were you in?
I think I was pretty well at the back, right at the back. It was a troop ship. It was designed as a troop ship, and later on it was used as for student trips after the war. I know a friend of mine was on it actually as a student. The conditions were not bad. It was, of course, going south, it was getting hotter and hotter, and it was very uncomfortable. although there was ventilation, the, you know, the usual sort of tropical ventilation we had on these boats. And I cut the length of my trousers, made myself some shorts, and made myself some other shorts out of a palliasse, actually. I cut it up with a razor blade. And that was that. And I wasn't sick. Nobody was sick on that boat, neither seasick nor anything else, not in our hold. There was no sickness, and there were no incidents where I was, although I've read about some incidents in other holds. There were none where I was. The only incident that I experienced was that officers came around who were from the Premier Club. Have you got any valuables you want us to keep? Give you a word of a British officer, you get it all back. Well, of course, nobody gave him anything. I didn't have anything except a little bit of money on me, and I had a gold ring which I hidden in the waistband of my trousers. But they got nothing, and of course, we didn't trust them. When I said, we'll give you the word of a British officer, we thought, well, we've watched that. So that was that. And we sailed around Cape Town. We saw the Cape, and of course, when we saw the Cape, we sailed in between Cape Town and Rome Island. We knew where it was going. We thought maybe we were going to South Africa, but after we passed Cape Town, we knew we were going to Australia. And eventually, we got to Australia. We got to Fremantle, the port of Perth, and the Australians came on board, but they didn't talk to us, and we knew where we were. I had tried to send, we stayed in Cape Town, we weren't allowed on the ship, and I tried to get a message on away from there, and it didn't really work. And people in Britain didn't know where we were. My relatives, like my fiancée, didn't have a clue. And when she asked the Home Office where we were, she said, we don't know, we might have escaped. that's a fact. They didn't tell her, or they didn't even know. And from Perth, or Fremantle, we sailed to Melbourne, and it's quite a long way, and we got there in September. I've got the exact date, I think it was the 16th of September. It was a long trip, and in Melbourne, our hold was taken off. We were, I don't know if it was Jewish, communists, all sorts of people, maybe a few Nazis, I don't know. Anyway, we were taken up individually. I was a category A, and it was a real farce. I was completely in rags by that time, at nothing at all. And I walked up the ship, and in front of me was a sergeant with a revolver, and behind me was a sergeant with a revolver. He'd taken it out of this holster. We walked up on this landing stage in Melbourne, and I thought, what a welcome this is. It was a beautiful day, what a welcome. Anyway, one after the other, we walked.